Chapter 3. 231. On reflex, Nairu took a step after Corpheron. A hand grabbed his wrist and he spun around to find Lasai holding him, her eyes wide and intent.
"Let them die," she insisted, letting go. "Let them all kill each other."
The former teacher hesitated and looked around the deck. Several dozen slaves watched him and Lasai, ready to take their lead from one or the other. He cast his gaze out to the continuing swirl of fighting on the sands, and to the figure of Corpheron striding purposefully towards the chaos. There was no hesitation there. Was Nairo any less a man?
"Why would you give your life for him?"
asked Lasai, thinking that she guessed his thoughts.
"He's nothing to us."
"Not him."
Nairo moved his eye to the giant form of Lorgar, just as the acolyte lanced one of his spears through the chest of a Covenant enforcer, bodily lifting the gun acolyte into the air.
"For him."
There was a look of pain in Lasai's expression. She shook her head and addressed the others.
"This moment will come again, even if we live today. The Church of the Covenant will not let this lie. Heretics, they'll call us. Not just slaves. Lower even than we are now. A lingering, painful death at the hands of the excruciators and penance deacons."
Her face changed, taking on a more conniving look as a thought occurred.
"Better yet, let us aid the Covenant. The better to cement our dedication to the Church of Varadesh."
"No,"
said Nairo. He spoke quietly but quickly, seized by urgency, the thought of moments passing that could bring doom like a fist about his heart.
"No, we do not do that, for we do not answer to the Covenant, but to the powers. Believe what you may about the lives and rules of mortals, but the powers exist, and they will judge us today. Corpheron is right. We stand beneath their gaze.
See, Lorgar! See the bearer of the word, the gift of the powers to us. Think not of today, but of all the days to come, and ask if that isn't worth fighting for, and even dying for."
Lasai moved to interpose herself between him and the ladder, but Nairo shoved her aside and stooped to pick up a wrench that had been discarded upon the deck. He saw others arming themselves with improvised weapons from among the corpses and blood of their companions, or looting the bodies of dead converts.
"Who do you think you are?"
Lasai laughed scornfully.
"You are just a slave to them."
"I am no slave. I have a name, and he knows it," he replied, staring at Lorgar.
He held aloft the wrench as though he wielded the mythical golden blade of Pyr Olurius itself.
"I am Nairo."
232. It took about 10 heartbeats, 10 lung-burning, chest-pounding heartbeats for Nairo to realize he had no idea what he was doing. As bullets spat past and the slaves to his left and right were scythed down by blasts and spear volleys, the wrench in his hand felt impossibly heavy. His strides became laboured, the sand tugging at his legs, feet made of clay as he tried to forge across the dunes that had become the centre of the battlefield. He fixed his eyes on Lorgar, about 40 metres ahead, and put his head down, ignoring the whisper of arrows and the shouts of his companions, shouts cut horribly short. His bare feet stumbled on sharp stones and pieces of shrapnel in the sand, causing him to falter and then fall as the shockwave from a shell detonation swept over him from the right, heat and sound that blocked out all sense. Gritting his teeth, he dragged himself up, determined that if he was to die, it would be on his feet. "This is ridiculous," part of his brain cackled at him. "You're a teacher, a slave. You're going to die here unmourned." The thought spurred him on. He knew that today his life had meaning, more than in the academy cloister, certainly more than when polishing and sanding and labouring on the temple rig. Lorgar was covered in cuts, his robes in rags, blood coating arms and bared chest with a wash of crimson. Yet he stood and fought on. The gigantic acolyte, now flanked by Axata and several other converts, slashed and battered all who came before him. Even in the short time since the battle had begun in earnest, his movements had become more fluid, his fighting less wild and more cultured. He thrust the spears with short stabs, gutting and piercing with faultless accuracy. One of the transports crashed towards the melee, its crew no longer caring whether they injured allies as well as enemies, intent only on bringing down the giant who continued to defy the will of the Covenant. Its course brought it ploughing along the ridge of the dune, directly towards Nairo and the other slaves. Small arms from visor-like slits coughed burning bolts into the mass of disorganized fighters. Nairo saw Hassan's hair set aflame, flailing into the dirt. Gore Douse lost a leg to a flurry of burning projectiles that seared bone as easily as flesh. Lasai. He had not thought Lasai would follow. But there she was, snarling and howling like a beast, a stolen glaive in her hands as she faced down the metal serpent bearing down upon them. Nairo saw her cast a glance towards Lorgar, and then she broke into a run, heading directly for the transport. A cannon in the nose of the millicrawler belched alchemical fire, and in an instant, Lasai and three others with her were nothing more than steam and hissing gobbets splashed across a pool of cooling glass. Nairo felt her death like a stab in the gut. The sensation continued, and something wetted his thighs. He looked down and realized that it was a literal wound, a short, barbed projectile stuck out beneath his ribs. Blood flowed and his legs weakened. Again he fell into the sand, the wrench dropped from twitching fingers. The bulk of the millicrawler labored towards him, plumes of smoke issuing from its stacks, the dune shifting and trembling under its weight, slides of sand cascading towards the vehicle as it mounted the slope. Nairo floundered in the red and grey particles, possessed by the idea that the powers would look upon him more kindly if he died with a weapon in hand. He thought of the prophets, and of the pilgrimage into the Empyrean to bring forth the light of the truth. Would he go there also, or into the nothingness and torment of the abyss? The shadow of the millicrawler's nose fell upon him. He could smell the vapor fumes from its engine and the stink of grease through the blood and charred flesh. Beyond an armored slit, he saw the driver's face, eyes looking at something else, utterly unaware of the life he was about to crush from existence. 233. A sudden storm of sand raked across Nairo's face, obscuring what happened next, though he heard well enough the titanic impact and the following scream of twisting, tearing metal. Wiping tears and grit from his face, the slave saw the nose of the crawler torn open, ripped along its length, the legs of the driver still in his seat, his upper half missing. He turned at movement in the corner of his eye and saw a giant figure sprawled on the sand a few meters away, cocooned in an elongated crater like a crashed meteor. He held two warped strips of blood-stained metal in his hands, the skin and flesh of his arms shredded from wrist to elbow.
Lorgar!
Nairo rose, ignoring the stab of pain in his abdomen. The acolyte roused, sitting up with the air of one not wholly in control of his senses. He said something in a tongue that Nairo didn't understand. It sounded like he could be cursing, but the slave was not sure. Lorgar tossed away the pieces of millicrawler, while Nairo scrambled down the dune, following the blood-spattered course of Lorgar's descent. Shouts caused him to glance over his shoulder, where Corpharon, Axata, and the converts were falling back to form a position around the wrecked transport. Doors hissed open along its length. The soldiers inside staggered out to be confronted by a wave of slaves who swept over them and poured into the broken millicrawler. Nairo staggered to a stop a couple of meters from the bearer of the word. Lorgar winced as he tried to stand, crimson pumping from the lacerations across the blood vessels in his arms. He grimaced as he tried to flex fingers with frayed tendons. Nairo felt a stab of conscience at the sight of the youth in pain. For so long he had thought him impervious. Had he really suffered through all of those whippings and beatings in silence, whilst feeling every blow? Lorgar held up his ruined hands towards Nairo, as if pleading for something. His mouth opened and closed with a wordless appeal. 234. Nairo tore off such garments as he had, a short toga of dirty, poorly woven linen. He used the bandages to bind Lorgar's arms, while around them the battle continued to rage. Lorgar nodded silently, focus returning to his gaze. Already the cuts across his chest and face were scabbed over, the stream of fluid from his arms stifled by his extraordinary body.
Why?
Nairo asked.
Why suffer so for me?
Lorgar replied in a lilting tongue, perhaps not realizing that he spoke some other language. It was impossible to read his expression, and before Nairo could ask again, the bearer of the words surged up the dune, taking up a snapped stanchion, its sheared end as sharp as any spear. He stopped and looked back, fixing Nairo with his penetrating gaze, pinning him to the spot with its intensity.
I might ask the same,
Lorgar said, before breaking into a run, heading for the thickest fighting. Nairo sat down, holding a hand to the wound below his ribs. It was not so severe as he had first feared. Shock had wounded him more than the projectile itself. He then realized that the barb had been pulled free. He saw it lying among the other debris where the bearer of the word had come to a stop. The only explanation was that Lorgar had removed it at some point, even as Nairo had been helping the youth, so fast that the slave had neither seen nor felt the extraction, despite the obvious damage to the youth's hands and the pain he must have felt.
That is why, Nairo whispered to himself.